Hey, what's up, folks? This is Tony Brewer. You're listening. Okay, we are listening to Cogitations. Cogitations is the podcast where we think about things, we contemplate them, we turn them over in our minds, and then we discuss them. Daniel chapter 7, verse 28, Daniel writes, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me. My countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." We're not going to keep the matter in our heart. We're going to talk about it. Today, we're going to, buddy, we got a doozy, and we're going to talk about this. Hopefully, we'll have some good conversation. Hopefully, I say something from my personal experience dealing with crazy situations that comes up when you're a gospel preacher, and I might shed some light on something that you've never thought about before. And I'm not trying to sound condescending. I had never thought about this until I had to deal with it in local work. Now, the reason you're getting an episode like this, full transparency, is a person that their feed comes across, or that some of their stuff comes across on my timeline. Incidentally, Facebook is weird. I don't know how many friends on Facebook. I hardly do anything on my personal timeline that has to do with my personal life. It's usually all of this for our podcasting platforms and stuff. But I did see this post. I'm going to read it now. Is it a sin? And she puts no rude comments, which, good luck. I hope she didn't get any, but I have found that even if you put that, you're going to draw rude comments. Now, this person is sincere. I have no doubt that she's sincere. She's not trying to stir up trouble, but I have been sitting on this for a few years now, and I think we're far enough removed from it that I can do content on it, and nobody will think that I am drudging up something to just push it in somebody's face, okay? Is it a sin? Well, a Christian sister got pregnant and the church decided to discipline her since she was not married. When the elders of the church met and interviewed her, she told them that she has stayed and remained in the church for several years and no one is marrying her and she is approaching the age of menopause, where she can't get pregnant even if married. So after reading some Christian medical journals on the issues, she decided and did artificial insemination, since she too wants a child. She tendered both of the medical journals and the medical documents that showed that she has done the artificial insemination from a reputable hospital. The sister is pregnant without committing fornication nor adultery with any man. Now, could this be a sin? Kindly give your reasons for your answer, and if possible, back it with scripture so that we can learn. You may wish to send to other Christian groups to see their position on the matter. What is your position? Your opinion with scripture backing is highly needed. Folks, I tell you what's more highly needed is for us to learn to think critically. Now, I'm not saying anything about the person that posted this. I am indicting our brotherhood as a whole, because we have gone so much off of emotions that we have forgotten collectively how to sit down with a critical thinking, with our critical thinking caps on, and removing emotion from it, ascertaining what God's will for something would be. We live under the Christian law of liberty. We have so much freedom, and with freedom comes great responsibility. We have to make sure that we're doing what God would want us to do. So what have we been given? We've been given a way, and I'm holding up my Bible here, we've been given a way to partake of the divine nature. We've given a way to commune with God and to take into us a piece of divine nature, the mind of God. We can have part of the mind of God and think like He does and prioritize like He does. Why in the world would we sit down and approach a problem like this from an emotional human standpoint? We've got to learn to think like God. And that's the purpose of this podcast. We're going to go to the scriptures and see what God would have us to do. And when I say go to the scriptures, there's not a lot of scriptures to go to. God is pretty clear in this matter. Now, let me draw your attention to the QR code. It's been up a minute. If you want to support us monetarily, you can do that. Scan that QR code. It takes you to Buy Me a Coffee, and you can support this stream and give us a $5 stream. Give us a $5 donation, and that gives you access to everything we do behind the scenes. I put out one video per week that's exclusive to our supporters. You can also go to www.patreon.com/Christianity Now and become a patron for as little as a dollar a month, and that gets you access to the same material. And that's all I've got. We're going to take this off of the screen, and I'm going to get to the chats where I can see the chats. If you have questions or comments as we go through this, by all means, put them in the comment section. Ask your questions. Share this on your timeline. Be the algorithm for us. And please consider subscribing to Christianity Now streams. We'd love to have 1,000 subscribers in 3 months. I think that's a big, hairy, audacious goal. So it may be we only shoot for 250. I don't know. We just need you to subscribe. Now, that's all I've got. I've read the comment, and let's talk about it. First off, let's kind of scrutinize it a little bit, all right? So it's pretty straightforward. A Christian sister got pregnant, and the church decided to discipline her since she was not married. So it was the position of probably the elders that in order to be pregnant, you needed to be married. Folks, I need a book, chapter, and verse that says that's not true. I really do. Don't we know? I mean, Hebrews chapter 13. In fact, I'm going to break out my trusted, whoops, wrong button. Let me cancel that. I'm going to break out my trusty, rusty e-sword. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. Do we understand the word honorable here? All right. It's timonos. It's precious. It's translated precious 11 times. It's translated dear. All right. It's translated honorable here. And Acts chapter 5, verse 34, then stood there up one in the council, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a doctor of the law, had in reputation among all the people, and commanded to put the apostles forth a little space. So had in reputation. He was precious, dear, honorable. Gamaliel was. All right? That's what marriage is. Marriage is special. Now, what is the purpose of marriage? Folks, the purpose of marriage ain't so you can have a pretty wife or a handsome husband. The purpose of marriage ain't so you can enjoy the physical pleasures of somebody without any problems. Not only. The purpose of marriage is for procreation. God, let's go read this. And man, look, I have had my position on this privately scrutinized, and I've had it privately scrutinized by some quote unquote pretty big names in the brotherhood. And quite frankly, I wasn't impressed with their ability to think. I don't really like these quote unquote big names in the brotherhood. They're too denominational. If you ask me, they're too much Church of Christ. Big Ten Christianity. And they don't understand how to just simply let's look at the Bible and let's think for a minute. If you're counseling, if a woman comes to you and a woman says, listen, I'm not married, and I'm never going to get married, but I really want to have children. You got to know how to counsel her. This is a moral and ethical question. And when I say counsel, understand that I'm not using counsel as a clinical term. I'm talking about you need as a mentor, you need as a teacher, you need as the person in the congregation that people go to for Bible answers, you need to be able to counsel somebody from Scripture on what they ought to do. All right. And I think about in Genesis here, and God said, this is verse 26, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and then let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth in the earth. And God created man in his own image, and the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them. Now that's important to me, verse 28 of Genesis 1. And God blessed them. How did God bless them? Well, whenever we read chapter 2, which is a recapitulation of chapter 1 with the focus on the humans, he blessed them with the marriage accord. That's how he blessed them. But then what did he tell them to do? Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth on the earth. Folks, procreation is given to a married couple. Now you may say, well, Tony, I get that. And some of the comments that I saw on this Facebook, they were good. Like they were really good. But some of them were just like, well, you know, at worst you can say is that it's unwise for a woman to go to a fertility clinic and participate in artificial insemination. All right. Now look, we're talking about specifically an unmarried woman. We will talk about in a moment a married woman who it has been found out that her husband, well, let's say they're having problems with getting pregnant with one another, okay? That's a different issue, and we'll talk about that. But right now, I'm talking about a single woman, a woman who's never been married, and she comes to you and she says, how does God view the decision that I'm thinking about? I want to go to a fertility clinic and I want to get sperm and I want to be inseminated and I want to bear a child. Well, I think there's some things to consider. Okay. And again, you might say, well, Tony, what you read in Genesis there, that might be showing principle, but that's not showing where it's sin. Personally, I disagree. God has a plan. I think about Genesis chapter 4 with Abel. God says to Cain, why art thou wroth and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, will it not be accepted of thee? And if thou doest not well, then sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. Meaning, if you sin, if you do not well, you will enter into a copulative relationship with sin, and you will produce a progeny that is death, chaos, as opposed to order or peace. Folks, the order of the cosmos is if you want to procreate, marriage is honorable, is precious in all that it includes and entails. Whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge. You say, well, Tony, this single woman that got pregnant, she didn't fornicate and she didn't adulterate. So what's the deal? How can you even talk like that? Well, I will tell you this, that there's a line in this thing, the sister is pregnant without committing fornication nor adultery with any man. The problem is she is not pregnant without a man. It took her and a man to participate in her pregnancy. And if you can't see that, then I don't know how to help you. And I'm not talking to the person that put the post out personally. I'm talking about generally speaking. If we can't see that every time an egg is fertilized, resulting in a baby, that a man and a woman participated together, with modern technology, the participation does not have to be in proximity of one another, and it doesn't have to be at the same time. But how do you think sperm is harvested at a sperm bank? Just think about that. You go to a sperm bank, they give you a specimen cup, and you go into a room where there is material that will aid you in giving a sperm sample. So already you're starting out with kind of a greasy, disgusting kind of act. It's not precious. It's not honorable. It's not godly. How do you think they get the sperm? Some dude gets a cup and some pornography and he masturbates into the cup. You see, we think about this from, we don't look behind the curtain. We think of everything as kind of saccharine, sterile, purely medical, purely scientific, and we've taken the humanity away from it. We've boiled humanity down to nothing but you and me, baby. We ain't nothing but mammals. We're just animals. It's gross. Like, that woman is pregnant and the sperm of a man was used. She did not get pregnant without the participation of a man. Well, it depends on how the sperm is taken. Like, if a married couple does this, I mean, if you got kids listening, maybe turn the volume down. If a married couple goes to a fertility clinic and the doctor says, okay, so we're going to take your sperm and we need a sperm specimen. Look, I'm getting my wife to help me harvest. And that's a matter of judgment. Now, that goes to my wife and I can participate in any kind of pleasurable act, and it's none of anybody's business. Okay. And then of course we have the sperm sample now. We have the specimen. But I'm speaking specifically for single women and single men. A man goes in, and here's another thing. And this is going to be difficult for people to hear because they don't know what adultery is. Adultery is when you triangulate one or both spouses away from you and God. So if a man can commit adultery simply by looking upon a woman for the purpose of lust, that's Matthew chapter 5. Go read that. Well, you know what? I guess we'll take our trusty Rusty and Matthew chapter 5. I believe it's, hold on a second, I'll get it. Yeah, verse 27. You have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh, that's looks and keeps on looking, on a woman to lust, that's for the purpose of lust, at lusting after her, he hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. So what if it is the case that a married man goes to a sperm bank, gets his specimen cup, gets his pornography, and again, if you got children, maybe shut their ears, ejaculates, he masturbates and ejaculates into this cup while using the pornographic images for concupiscence, which is evil concupiscence. And then this woman gets that sperm. She has participated in this adulterous act. Now, she hasn't committed adultery, I understand. But that man did. And she is participating in the adulterous act. She's paying money into a system that foments adulterous acts. And incidentally, she's paying money into a system that breaks down the fabric of our society because it encourages children to be produced and reared in fatherless homes. It goes against the laws of nature. The laws of nature set up by God is one man, one woman. He blessed that union, and then he said, go be fruitful and multiply. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. The family unit is for the purpose of procreation. In fact, the word for bed is coitus. And it's not just used of the sexual act only, okay? So let's go to the book of Hebrews chapter 13 and let's look at this. This is very interesting what this Hebrew word, verse 4 of Hebrews 13. Marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled. The word bed is koite. It's translated bed twice in the New Testament. Here in Hebrews 13:4 and Luke chapter 11, verse 7. Let's just go to Luke 11. All right. And he said unto them, this is verse 5, which of you shall have a friend and shall go unto him at midnight and say unto him, friend, lend me 3 loaves. And for a friend of mine is in his journey, is come to me, and I have nothing to set before him. And he from within shall answer and say, trouble me not. The door is now shut, and my children are with me in bed. I cannot rise and give thee. The word bed is the same word used in Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is honorable and all, and the bed undefiled. Marriage has to do with the sexual act, with procreation, with rearing children. You understand, all that it entails is precious. And whenever we have a single woman who is not married says, I want to have a baby, she is cheapening and degrading marriage. That cannot be right and acceptable in the eyes of God. And if you don't agree with this, go kick rocks. I have had this scrutinized by the most preeminent of brethren in the Church of Christ, and I just wasn't impressed. Comments. I see it that way. Sometimes it's the man with no sperm. Yes. And Deborah O'Neill said, will this apply to surrogate mothers as well, depending on how it's done? Listen, surrogacy is an interesting thing. While technically there might be no book, chapter, and verse that you could point to that would say surrogacy is wrong, I think surrogacy is one of those things that dehumanizes and animalizes humanity. God's creation. I would not consciously, I could not participate in surrogacy. And for clarity, let me define, here's what I mean when I say surrogacy. Now that you've asked me this, I think I've formulated something here. All right. If me and my wife, if I was healthy and had good sperm, she was healthy and had good eggs, both of us were young, and we're just like, you know what? We really want children, but my wife doesn't want to be pregnant. She doesn't want to, you know, change her body or anything like that. So we're going to pay $25,000 to a woman. We're going to fertilize an egg in the jar, and then we're going to insert it into a woman that we pay, and we rent her womb. Folks, I think that goes to Genesis chapter 4. If thou doest well, will it not be accepted of thee? But if thou doest not well, then sin lieth at the door. This is counter to the laws of nature. It's counter to the laws of nature. And just because we have the technology to do it doesn't mean it's right. We got the technology to do all manner of things, and it doesn't mean it's right. And this is my problem with these quote-unquote preeminent brethren that I talked to. They wouldn't look at it from what the Bible said. They just said, well, the woman is not actually having sex with anybody, so she's not committing adultery or fornication, and You can't find a book, chapter, and verse that says it's wrong, and we have the technology to do it, so therefore it's okay. I'm like, you're just dumb. How can you be so obtuse? And it's the reason they're so obtuse is because the only thing they do is they regurgitate the same 40 or 50 bullet points of the quote-unquote Church of Christ, and that's everybody likes it. Anyway, too many playing God. Artificial insemination is wrong. Just because science can do these things doesn't make it ethical. What is closely related is many parents will put their daughters on birth control pills because deep down they know they can't keep them from, they can't stop them from having sex. Others will argue for eugenics because in their way of thinking, that's also a way of controlling population. What happened to the, hey, get married and have a baby for, and it for whatever reason we can't make a, and if for whatever reason we can't make a baby, did you ever think that it maybe is God's will? This definitely is my opinion, opinionated opinion, but maybe I just look at things more black and white. There may be some issue with some opinionated opinion there, but generally speaking, this is how we need to look at it. We don't need to go from, in order to go to the Bible and ascertain God's will, we don't need to start with the presupposition that it's okay, and then I've got to depend on the Bible to prohibit it. I need to go to the Bible to ascertain the mind of God, because under Christ, I have the liberty to make certain decisions. And God gives me the information I need. And you better be careful, folks, because it may be that God was vague on this, and I don't think he was vague, but it may be that your perception of vagueness is there because God's given you enough rope to hang yourself. He's wanting to see just how far you'll take this. And look, drawing wisdom and inspiration from a contemporary source, do you remember Jeff Goldblum's character on Jurassic Park whenever he was touring that lab and stuff where they were cloning the dinosaurs? He said, it's amazing. He said, you people have been so worried about whether or not you are able to do this, you never stopped to consider whether or not you should do this. Folks, it is a net negative on humanity, on God's creation, for a single woman to bring a child into the world to be raised in a fatherless home. A married couple have the option to adopt. That was done in the Bible. Absolutely. And again, a married couple can go to a family planning center if they're having trouble conceiving, and there are things that can be done for them. Okay? But I need to make a point here. In vitro fertilization, that means in the jar, in the glass. Here's what in vitro fertilization does. Now, here's the problem. A Christian sister got pregnant and the church decided to discipline her. It does not say what type of artificial insemination that she got. Let me tell you what some artificial insemination is. It's called in vitro fertilization, and they will take 10 or 15 eggs, and they will take sperm from an anonymous sperm donor, and they will fertilize all of those eggs in a glass. So let's say they take 10 eggs. They fertilize, and let's say that out of 10, let's say 7 are fertile. You have now 7 babies, 7 fertilized eggs in the petri dish, in the glass. And they will take the strongest 5, all right, the strongest 4, whatever, and inseminate the woman with those. Or not inseminate, but they will put those eggs in the woman's womb. And what about the other two? They will either dispose of them, which is murder, or they will freeze them. And I want you to Google a phenomenon called snow babies. just Google artificial insemination snow babies and look at the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands by now, snow babies, these fertilized eggs that are on ice in these fertility clinics. These are souls that are trapped in limbo. There is nothing good about this industry, folks. So if you are a married couple and you are doing in vitro fertilization, even with your own sperm and eggs, you've got some problems because you're participating in murder or you're participating in putting these little babies in limbo. So I don't know what this sister did. Did she do in vitro fertilization where inevitably murder was taking place? Abortion, that's what it is. Or was she doing this where one sperm and then one egg at a time, in which case she spent a lot of money because it don't always take. Something to think about. I just don't know. So if she did in vitro fertilization, that is ipso facto, you cannot participate in vitro fertilization the way it's done commonly, where they do multiple eggs and multiple, where they do multiple eggs. All right. So we're talking about a single woman. Let's quickly, here's some reasons. This is why a single mother or a single woman that says, I'm not married and I want to have a baby, she is selfish. It's sad, but if you're 30, 35 years old and you're not married, you've just lost out on that experience, all right? Become a eunuch for the kingdom. You've already been a eunuch for the kingdom. And that's another thing. It's like we don't understand that that's not an option, or we don't understand that that's an option. Being a eunuch for the kingdom, I mean, Jesus talked about that in Matthew chapter 19. Do you understand that getting your eggs fertilized, that's not eunuch behavior? Just something to think about. But here's the reason why. It is selfish, and it cheapens marriage, and it cheapens motherhood, and it flies in the face of God's design, God's rules for the cosmos, which I would only have to identify as sin in order for a non-married single woman to become impregnated in any way on purpose and to have a rear child. I can definitely see IVF as being absolutely wrong. However, for artificial insemination, I think we need to recognize the fact that even if it's not sinful, it is extremely unwise. Yeah. And I, again, whenever you're counseling somebody, if you counsel them that this is a good thing, you're going to bust hell wide open, because you're lying to them. And it is the height of selfishness for a single parent to want to bring a child into the world, for a mother, a woman to want to bring a child into the world and rear that child in a home without a father. All right, let's go here. This is from Canada, by the way. And I chose this article because Canada is so very, very liberal. But notice, this is from Canada. This is CanadianCRC.com. This is Canadian Children's Right Council. So this is the Canadian Children's Right Council website. Fatherless children in Canada. Fatherlessness is one of the greatest social problems in Canada. Now, I promise you that you find all of these articles like this for the United States as well. All right. Interesting quote from Amy Alicon, the advice goddess, syndicated columnist in over 100 U.S. and Canadian publications. While the law allows men to turn casual sex into cash flow sex, while the law allows women to turn casual sex into cash flow sex, Penelope Leach, in her book, Children First, poses an essential question. Why is it socially reprehensible for a man to leave a baby fatherless, but courageous, even admirable, for a woman to have a baby whom she knows will be so? This is the problem. We live in a gynocentric society that has alleviated women of every single responsibility of womanhood and has put everything squarely on the shoulders and all blame squarely on the shoulders of men. All right? Women have access to like 40-something different kinds of birth control. Women have access to the morning after pill. Women have access to abortion. But a man has no choice. He cannot alleviate his responsibility to the sexual act when procreation happens. In other words, a woman can give up her child for adoption once it's born. A woman can murder her child in the womb. But a man absolutely cannot excise himself from that woman and that child's life. He is on the hook till that child is 18 years old for child support and stuff like that. If we're going to live in a society, and this is secular, if we're going to live in society with abortion on demand up to and including 9 months, then there ought to be a law on the books that allows a man to financially abandon the child. That's just all there is to it. And it's not equal. It makes women superior. It gives women the advantage. Women are more privileged in that way from a secular standpoint. Now, the problem is this thinking that has caused this has crept into the church. And whenever we see a young mother, she gets pregnant out of wedlock, and once the initial stigma is passed, oh, she's brave and courageous. No, she's not brave and courageous. She put herself through a sinful act, making sinful decisions. She put herself in a situation that she has no choice. You're not brave and courageous if you exercise the only option that you have. If I'm in prison and I don't commit murder while I'm in prison, that doesn't mean I'm reformed. It just means that I wasn't given the opportunity to do my particular crime. My daughter doesn't have children, but she's mothered her nieces and nephews. Amen. Yes. All right. Now, listen to this. Fathers commit a tiny minority of child abuse and about half of the domestic violence. Listen to that. Now, this is in Canada, where they are ultra, ultra liberal, and they hate straight males, especially straight white males. Fathers commit a tiny minority of child abuse and about half of the domestic violence. The vast majority of child physical and sexual abuse is committed in single-parent homes, usually where the father is not present. Contrary to public perception, research shows that the most likely physical abuser of a young child will be that child's mother, not a male in the household. And I'm going to put the articles that I referenced today in the show notes. And I'm not giving you the references. I'm not reading the references. They'll be in the article. The father is the parent most likely to be the protector of the children. The presence of the father placed the child at lesser risk for child sexual abuse, according to David L. Rowland, Laurie S. Zabin, and Mark Emerson in a study of low-income families. The protective effect from the father's presence in most households was sufficiently strong to offset the risk incurred by the few paternal perpetrators. A British study found children are up to 33 times more likely to be abused when a live-in boyfriend or stepfather is present than in an intact family. Cornell University professor Yuri Bronfenbrenner, one of the most eminent developmental psychologists of our time, wrote the following: controlling for factors such as low income, Children growing up in father-absent households are at greater risk for experiencing a variety of behavioral and educational problems, including extremes of hyperactivity and withdrawal, lack of attentiveness in the classroom, difficulty in deferring gratification, impaired academic achievement, school misbehavior, absenteeism, dropping out, involvement in socially alienated peer groups, and the so-called teenage syndrome of behaviors that tend to hang together, smoking, drinking, early and frequent sexual experience, and in the more extreme cases, drugs, suicide, vandalism, violence, and criminal acts. Basically, what this man is saying, this Cornell professor, who is liberal, by the way, not a conservative, you know that. If you want to give your child the best possible opportunity to grow up to be a psychopath, raise them in a single parent home where the father is absent. Research mainly in the United States published in referred journals by respected scholars like Sanford Braver, Margaret Brenning, Douglas Allen, Eileen Walcott, Judy Hughes, Judith Wallerstein, and Sandra Blakesley, and corroborated by the professional experience of authors as ideologically diverse as Constance Aarons, the names, that doesn't matter, indicates the paternal abandonment cannot account for widespread fatherlessness. Father deprivation is a more reliable predictor of criminal activity than race, environment, or poverty. So you take a poor child raised in a two-parent home, that child has a better chance of success than a rich child raised in a single-parent father-absent home. Listen to this. Father-deprived children. 72% of all teenage murderers, father-deprived children. 60% of rapists are father-deprived children. 70% of kids incarcerated, father-deprived children. A father-deprived child is twice as likely to quit school, 11 times more likely to be violent. Father-deprived children make up 3 out of 4 teen suicides. 80% of the adolescents in psychiatric hospitals are father-deprived children. 90% of runaways are father-deprived children. The sources are the National Fatherhood Initiative and the U.S. Bureau of Census and the FBI. Father deprivation is a serious form of child abuse that is institutionalized and entrenched within our legal system. Powerful, sexist people have a vested interest in diminishing the role of men, especially their role as fathers. Research proves that children thrive with the active and meaningful participation of both biological parents and is true for post-divorce families. So, the importance of father love, history, and contemporary evidence. So, this is published in a review of general psychology to the American Psychological Association. This review contains such topics as a father's love is as important as mother love. Father love predicts specific outcomes better than mother love. Father love is the sole significance predictor of the specific outcomes. Father love moderates the influence of mother love. Paternal versus maternal parenting may be associated with different outcomes in sons and daughters. So, children who grew up without fathers are 8 times more likely to go to prison, 5 times more likely to commit suicide, 20 times more likely to have behavioral problems, 20 times more likely to become rapists, 32 times more likely to become runaways, 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 1/10 as likely to get A's in school. And this is from the Institute of Study of Civil Society. the UK, it's the stunning statistics on the problem of fatherless homes. And look, I'm all of these things, man. Like, I'm done reading this particular article. And there's another article. It's from the Minnesota Psychological Association, and Father Absent Homes, the Implications for Criminal Justice and Health Professionals. And you know what? I'm tired of reading all of this. Let me explain something, all right? And this is going to be hard to hear. It might be hard for the women to hear, but you need to hear it. All of these statistics about how many times more likely it is for a child raised in a single mother home, a father absent home. All right, so you would think that children raised in a single father, mother absent home would suffer from the same statistics. In other words, a child without his mother. Because remember what we're told. Well, a child must be with his mother. When a divorce happens, the children must go with the mother, okay? Statistically speaking, it would be better off if the default in a separation or divorce, if the courts sided with the fathers the way they side with mothers now, because statistically speaking, a child growing up in a mother-absent home with the father present, statistically, they have the same chance in life as a child that grows up in a two-parent home with the father and mother present. When you take the father away, things go to hell. When you take the mother away, there is no statistically significant change. The father is the most important aspect to a child's success. But that's not very popular. And what this woman did, is it sin? I don't know if you can say the act in and of itself of artificial insemination is sinful. But the preponderance of evidence and everything associated with it, there is no way from Scripture that looking at all of this, that you can say that it is holy and righteous and acceptable by God for a single woman to go to a sperm bank and become artificially inseminated and bear a child. It's wrong. How can it be right with all of this unholy and unrighteous mess that goes along with it? In other words, it's not just the one-time act. Now, with a man and a woman, look, this is, and this is another thing that people disagree with me about. If my wife comes up pregnant and the baby is not mine, that has adulterated our marriage. I don't care how she got pregnant. I don't care if I gave her permission. If she says, you know what, Tony, I really want another child. Well, I can't give you another child. So go out and do whatever you need to do to get pregnant. Just don't tell me about it. And she goes out and she gets pregnant. She's committed adultery. Well, Tony, how can you say that she committed adultery if she went to a sperm bank? Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Her flesh partnered, commingled with flesh that is not hers and is not mine. That's adultery. I don't care what anybody says. And I think if you say different, you're just delusional. And you haven't thought about it enough. Go to Galatians chapter 6, man. Listen to what Paul says. Don't you dare be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. He that sows to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. Whenever you invite a third party, doesn't matter how sterile and how saccharine and how whitewashed it is, when you invite a third party into the marriage that's not God, you have mocked God. You have cheapened marriage. I don't understand how we can be okay with that. Now, I have driven home how terrible I think this is. I think that I've given some biblical principle about it. And I don't see how you could, after you've listened to this, tell me what I said that was wrong. Tell me how you, in good conscience, could take a woman who's, let's say she's 28 to 30, that's about the time that your value in the sexual marketplace is diminished. It's going to be a lot harder for you to find a husband. It's going to be a lot harder for you to conceive a child naturally. So before you quote unquote hit the wall, you want to go to a sperm bank and you want to be artificially inseminated. Now, forget in vitro fertilization, because you can't do in vitro fertilization the way in vitro fertilization is normally done because of the issues with abortion and murder. But you as a gospel preacher, you as an older woman, you have a young woman sitting down and says, I just want to have a baby. I just want to be a mother. I want to go through the experience. I want to go through the experience of morning sickness and having my belly grow and feeling that life grow inside of me. So I'm going to go participate in procreation. Tell her everything I said. Go read Genesis and look and explain, like, honey, that's not what you need to do. You need to decide you're going to be a eunuch for the kingdom. Now, what you need to do, if you're 28 years old, you need to lower your standards and you need to get out there and you need to find a godly husband. Here's the thing. If you're 28 years old and you haven't found anybody to marry you, go to the men that you've put in the friend zone and bat your eyelashes and fix that man a plate at the next fellowship meal and sit beside him, and you'll be married in no time. Because these men that you put in the friend zone, they'll make really, really, really good husbands. You've just got to commit to them. So that's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do, and this is how you can counsel somebody, go to the fertility clinic and say, I want to adopt a snow baby. If it is the case that you want to experience pregnancy, you can do that. Go adopt a snow baby. Go to the fertility clinic and see what it takes to adopt a snow baby. What I mean by that is there are frozen embryos left over from these fertility clinics that are just on ice. And you can find articles. Well, let me see if I can find one on the fly. All right, snow babies. All right. I didn't do that well. Hold on. Snow babies. Nope, all I'm getting is a bunch of... Hold on. What are SNOW? Yeah, let me do that. Oh, here's a good article. All right. This is from KidSpot. The in vitro fertilization dilemma. What happens to leftover embryos? Meet the moms who gave their snow babies away to give strangers the gift of parenthood. They're called snow babies. The frozen in vitro fertilization embryos spare and left over in storage by parents whose IVF journey has ended. Each tiny embryo represents potential life. It just represents life suspended effectively in time. For its parents, each can represent a stark dilemma, destroy or donate. And for childless people, almost out of options, they can represent a last chance of achieving the dream of parenthood. Let me tell you something. If you are a married couple and you can't get pregnant, and it's your issue as the man delivering the sperm and her womb is fine, go to these places and say you want to adopt snow babies. That would be better than having another man's sperm fertilize your wife. All right? She can actually carry these snow babies. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not surrogacy. You're not dehumanizing anything. You're actually coming to the rescue. And that's a moral good. All right. This is a decision that will become more common. In Australia, an estimated hundreds of thousands of, I did not realize that. I figured it was tens of thousands, but in Australia alone, hundreds of thousands of snow babies exist. But what to do with them is an ethical and emotional minefield, as journalist Amy Langdon reveals on 60 Minutes Sunday night, examining what happens when an embryo donation goes right and how it can also go wrong. Could you give your babies away to a complete stranger? They're not. You have boiled down the procreation process to a biological formula. You have turned us into soulless entities when you participate in stuff like this. So you have to appropriate the language of the heathens, the hedonistic people, the world, you have a clump of cells in a petri dish and it's only potential life to you. What do you care what happens to it? That's what bothers me about abortion on demand up to and including 9 months. At 8.5 months, a woman wants to have an abortion, and it happens. It doesn't matter what people say, it happens. Why would you kill the baby? Remove the baby from the womb. It's got to come out anyway, and give it to a couple. That's why adoption in the United States ought to be as easy as abortion. From a political standpoint, I would say that if we're going to have abortion on demand up to and including 9 months, and the government is going to subsidize abortion, which it does in roundabout ways still, despite the great strides we have covered lately, have the government subsidize adoption just as much as it does abortion. Anyway. Yeah, said preach it. Yeah, I got to get off my soapbox. Anyway, I'm not going to read the rest of this. It's just on a cursory, and I'm going to put it in the show notes, but on a cursory YouTube or Google search, I found, boom, conception, IVF dilemma, what happens to the leftover embryos? And according to this source, there are hundreds of thousands in Australia. The United States of America is more populous, and this happens on a larger scale. So how many snow babies do you think there are in America? Let me tell you something I know for a fact. It is a moral absolute that rescuing innocent lives is good and acceptable by God. And if you want to experience the joys of childbirth and having a baby, even if you're a single woman, go to the fertility clinic and adopt snow babies. Now, look, you might say, well, Tony, if all of that stuff you say is true about the statistics, then isn't it just as bad for a woman to get a snow baby as it is for her to be artificially inseminated? No, because you're not circumventing the laws of nature. The laws of nature have already been circumvented with a snow baby. you're rescuing the snow baby, and you're giving that snow baby the chance at life and the chance to make the right decisions, even if they are at a great disadvantage. Which would you rather have? Zero chance or a greatly disadvantaged chance? Sadly, it seems that critical thinking is frowned upon. Yes, yes, yes. And let me tell you something. I am so sick of the Church of Christ denomination. And we have in the Lord's church a subset of our demographic that is nothing but a capital C, Big Ten Christianity, Church of Christ denomination. And I'm tired of it. I get so sick of these people. I'm so glad I am thousands of miles away in some cases from the Bible Belt. Make me mad. And if you get offended at what I just said, go kick rocks. All right. And if you get offended at what I said, it may be the hit dog yipped. I may not have been talking about you. I just threw a rock out there and hit something or somebody. All right. Now, have I covered everything I want to cover? A single woman wanting to procreate at the very least, the act itself is not sinful. But when you look at the act as a whole and everything associated with it, there is no way from the Bible you can justify a woman procreating. Nor can you justify a man procreating. Look, if sperm donors get money in some cases. I don't know how much. Well, let me Google. We'll Google this on the fly. How much money for sperm donation? Oh, wow. All right. In Canada, in eastern Quebec, about $75. In northern Quebec, $105. Wow. In New Brunswick, I can get $205 for good sperm. Well, look, man, I mean, I guess you could go to the sperm bank once a week. That's $800 a month. Do you understand that procreation, if you are donating sperm to a sperm bank, you are cheapening marriage. Marriage is honorable in every facet, in every aspect of marriage. It's honorable. And if you're donating sperm as a man to a sperm bank, you are cheapening marriage. How in the world can you take something that God has made holy and do something that makes it common? And how in the world can you say that just because there's no book, chapter, and verse that explicitly condemns it, that it's okay to do? We've been made partakers of the divine nature. We're supposed to be able to think better than that. We're supposed to be able to ascertain the mind of God, and we've forgotten how. And in the church, this secular humanist bend has come in, and it's like we can separate our physical selves from our spiritual selves. Folks, that's the argument of the church in Corinth. They're like, hey, man, I've got a body that's built for sex, so I'm going to do it. No. Food's meant for the body, and the body's meant for food. If your body's meant for sex, but that doesn't mean that you can have sex indiscriminately, because you sin against your body. You sin against God, but you sin against your body. That's what this is. That's the argument. We can do it. We have the technology. Well, just because you can do it doesn't mean God's pleased with it. It's for marriage. All right. I need a way to end this. I got the boiler going. and I don't have my deal turned up exactly like it needs to be. But let me think here. All right, well, I need to tie this up. A single woman wanting to procreate, in other words, get artificial insemination, she can't do it and be right in the eyes of God. Period. A married woman getting sperm from another man, she can't do that and be right in the eyes of God because it adulterates the marriage. You bring a man into the marriage bed, okay? Whether you like it or not, that's what you're doing. And then a man can't go to a sperm bank and donate his sperm because he's cheapening marriage and he is being involved in all of this that we talked about. So there, we're done. That's how you deal with the moral and ethical situation of artificial insemination. Now, what's the solution? I would say that if you're a woman in her late 20s, early 30s, and you know that you're not going to be getting married, you've resolved yourself to be a eunuch for the kingdom, and you would like to rescue one of these poor, innocent lives at these fertility clinics that are called snow babies, do it. And it, look, I can't help it if the payoff is you get to experience pregnancy, the hormonal change, you get to experience birthing a child and the bond of having that first skin-to-skin contact and that baby nursing from your breast for the first time. I can't help it if you get to experience all of that and you're rescuing this child from being in limbo forever. I know that that child is at an extreme disadvantage because he's going to be reared in a fatherless home. But what would you rather have? Zero chance or a small chance? I would always rather have a small chance. So we've got that taken care of. A man and a woman, if you're having trouble with getting pregnant, go to a fertility clinic and say, look, we want to try artificial insemination, but we want to make sure that we don't have any leftover eggs. In other words, we're going to use all of the eggs, and we don't want to have any abortion. Like, in other words, we're not going to let you fertilize 8 or 10 eggs and have 8 of them take, and we're not going to let you put all 8 in our womb. All right, we're going to do one egg and one. We're going to do it one at a time. If we have 8, talk to your fertility clinic doctor and be like, look, we're going to make sure that we're not going to make any snow babies and we're not going to abort any babies, and let them craft your plan and use your sperm and your eggs, husband and wife. But if it is the case where the fertility clinic says, well, you realize that the eggs that you're producing is not good, all right, but the sperm is, well, then you can't go get an egg from another woman. And if the woman, if her eggs are good and the man's sperm is bad, then she can't go get sperm from another man. So what do? Get a snow baby. Get a snow baby. There's nothing wrong with that. And you will experience, you will have rescued this child from limbo, and you will have given that child a chance. And that child will be greatly advantaged over a child that's brought up in a fatherless home. And you will experience as a couple the pregnancy process, the morning sickness, the cramps, the rubbing of the feet, the coconut butter on the belly, all of that good stuff. And whenever that baby's born, the mama is going to experience that first skin-to-skin contact and the suckling at the breast, and the man is going to be able to cut the cord. I mean, it's the fact that that baby's not biologically yours will never enter into your mind. And you will have performed an amazing thing. You will have done something, whether you're single or whether you're married, if you rescue a snow baby. You will have done something for which there can be no law cited. You've broken no principle. You violated the laws of nature. None at all. Nature was already circumvented. You stepped in to try to rectify it as much as you could. That is noble. That is holy. That is righteous. This other stuff, not so. And remember, ladies, statistically, fathers are more important than mothers in the home. You remember that, and you honor the man you decided to marry, because he is the deciding factor of whether or not that child has the best possible chance. So don't bring a child into the world to live in a fatherless home. Don't procreate like that. Go rescue a child, but don't procreate. That's all I've got. Yeah, there's a whole lot of places in the United States, Tarita, that people need to go. But remember, be the evangelist where you are. All right. The men and families in the congregation should step up and do things with the child and be there for that little family. Go to the ball games and school functions and cheer them on. Yes. Yeah, if you're a single woman and you've run up against the wall and you know you're not going to be married, you're not going to ever procreate, rescue a snow baby. But partner with the leadership of your congregation. Let them know what you're doing. And be like, look, we want to do this, but this child needs positive male role models. Look, there's ways to do things. Doing them behind closed doors and doing them without counsel of wise people first, that's an issue. But if you do it right, if you go to the fertility clinic, you rescue that snow baby, you've communicated with your family, you've communicated with your church family, and you have made sure that you've got the proper influences in that child's life, then good on you. And I know what you're saying. Well, Tony, if the woman got impregnated at the sperm bank, couldn't she do the same thing? She could, but she's still violating, she's still cheapening marriage. She's still participating in something that's unholy and greasy and nasty and has to be done behind closed doors. So anyway, let's not strip the spiritual aspect, the metaphysical aspect of marriage and pregnancy and procreation from the process. That goes against God's will. That's not God's design. And if something goes against the laws of nature that God has set up, what do you call that? You call it sinful. So is it sinful? Artificial insemination, is it sinful? Is the very act? Obviously not. Because if my wife is artificially inseminated with my sperm, no sin has been committed. But I think I have made my case. If you don't agree with me, chew on it. Live with it for just a little bit. Poke at it. Find what I've said. Find the foolishness in what I've said. Find where I've spoken more than what the Bible speaks. I challenge you. And that's all I've got. God bless every one of you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the positive feedback that I received from the comment section. I am going to link these three articles in the show notes. So if you'll subscribe to Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, or Podbean, and on Christianity Now, the articles will be in the description on the Christianity Now YouTube channel, Christianity Now Streams. But anyway, that's all I've got here. God bless you. Please consider supporting us monetarily. Follow the page, subscribe, be the algorithm for us. God bless you. This has been Tony Brewer with Cogitations, and we'll catch you on the flip side.